and welcome to this week's episode of the Cure Talks Cancer podcast. What you just heard is today's guest, Evan Ruggiero, tap dancing and playing music. Evan may sound like an average performer, but he actually has an incredible story behind him that included cancer diagnosis and an eventual leg amputation. First of all, can you just start by telling us a little bit about your dance experience?
Absolutely. I grew up in New Jersey, right here, not far away in Old Bridge. And I started dancing when I was 5 years old. I started with a hip-hop class because I was inspired by Michael Jackson doing Thriller, my neighbor across the street and I, on Halloween, were found doing that. And at that same time, my sister had just enrolled in a dance class. So it's very much like that story of Mike from A Chorus Line, if you know the musical, where he goes to his sister's dance class and he says, hey, I could do that. And my mom signed me up, and I had a great first year. And then the second year, I wanted to take tap dancing. And I loved the way that my feet could hit the floor and make music. It was very philosophical for 6 years old. I really enjoyed that. And I continued for the next few years tap dancing, and I wanted to take my dancing to the next level. So I auditioned for a professional tap company at the age of 10 called the New Jersey Tap Ensemble. They rehearsed in Montclair, New Jersey, and I got in. So my first performance was at Ramapo College in New Jersey, and then my second performance was at Lincoln Center in New York City. So it started off really exciting for me at 10, 11 years old. I continued with that all through high school and college, and I got involved in musical theater where I was singing, dancing, and acting. And I don't want to get too far into this now before we, you know, get into the next section.
All right,
so I'll let you go.
Okay, so my next question is, when you were in college, mm-hmm. you were at Montclair State University,
correct.
Right? You were diagnosed with osteosarcoma. So kind of take us through how you came to realize that you had this disease and what was going through your mind at that point?
I was a sophomore in college at Montclair State, and I was performing a lot. I was taking ballet 4 days a week, and tap, and jazz, and singing, and acting classes. And with that rigorous and demanding schedule, I one morning woke up, and I had a pain in my right leg, and I thought, okay, I maybe just fractured the bone, or I bruised something. I can't walk on my leg, though. And so I got on crutches, and I had an x-ray taken, and that doctor said he doesn't want to touch what he sees in my leg. He says he sees maybe a lesion or a tumor or a mass of some sort, and to have it checked out at Sloan Kettering in New York City. And so I hear Sloan Kettering, and I think, Sloan Kettering, isn't that cancer? And he said, you know, we don't want to jump to any conclusions right now, but have it checked out by this orthopedic specialist and go from there. So I have it checked out, and we have the biopsy done. And later that night, after the biopsy, I was told that I was being diagnosed with osteosarcoma, which is bone cancer. So we talked about the next steps and possibly chemotherapy and all the surgery that would have to be done. And that's a real thing. You know, I had just gone from performing in a show at school and going out and hanging out with my friends at some college party, and now I'm talking about my life, or, you know, life or death situations here. And you can't really prepare for that sort of thing until it actually happens, and you take it right there, and you're living in that moment. And I was scared. And I remember calling up my grandmother and grandfather and crying on the phone to them and not knowing what to do. And I left school, and I started to focus on getting better. So we talked about all this surgery and state-of-the-art operations and taking bones out of my left leg and putting them in my right leg. That didn't go so well, and it had its complications. So I had muscle taken from my lat muscle in my back, and that was placed into my right leg. And that went well, and I spent about 33 days in the hospital, and my mother spent every single day there. She was by my side every night. And finally I got home for Christmas and New Year's, and it was 2009, about to be 2010, and so I was just excited to be home for the holidays. Having all this surgery from October 2009 until May of 2010, and that's when the next big thing happened.
So what happened at that point? Because up until then, amputation wasn't really in the conversation.
No, not at all.
So tell us
and
what
I was,
happened.
Yeah, and I was great. I was going to physical therapy. I was getting stronger. I was healing. And I was going to have this operation. And there were my doctors were going to take hip bone and slam dunk it, was their term, into my tibia, where the cancer had been. And I'm in the operation room, and I'm woken up, and I knew something was wrong because my hip felt totally fine. And my doctors had explained to me that my cancer had come back, and now it was not only a bone cancer, but a soft tissue cancer, and that there's a threat that it had spread to my lungs. So now the only thing left to do to save my life was to amputate my right leg above the knee. And now I'm livid, I guess is the best way to put it. Now, you know, I'm angry. I mean, as well as upset. And, you know, you could only imagine the emotions and the words that are coming from my mouth at this point. Not good words.
I'm sure.
Well, yeah, because you go through 7 months of surgery, and this is what I said. I said, you know, we're going to go through 7 months of surgery, and now what is it? Is it just trashed? You know, what do we do? And, you know, he explained to me that we're dealing with a very dangerous disease. And so we start talking about the positives, about moving forward as an amputee and prosthetics and how far we've come with technology. And I got excited about that. That was cool. And I talked about driving again and running and swimming and, you know, everything that would be available to me. And I talked about tap dancing and wanting to tap dance. And in this moment, I remembered a tap dancer named Peg Leg Bates. He lost his leg in a cotton gin accident when he was 12. And he taught himself how to tap dance with a peg leg. So he went on to perform all over the world. And I saw this video of him when I was 16 and didn't really think much of it until this moment that I was being told that my leg had to be amputated. So I used that as the inspiration to continue to tap dance. And so the road to tap dancing, you know, before I get there, was not easy getting there, because we had the amputation. I had the amputation. And then I found out that the cancer had spread to my lungs. It metastasized to each lung. So I started to go through chemotherapy, and I went through a total of 16 months of chemo, and I had a 9-month clinical trial to get rid of the tumors that were in my lungs, as well as 2 lung operations to take the tumors out as well. And my total treatment time was 2 years. So I went from October of 2009 to October of 2011. And when I finally finished was when I said to my prosthetist, I said, okay, it's time to tap dance. We know what Peg Leg Bates is doing. You know, let's try and modernize this. But I also want to pay tribute to him, so I don't want anything fancy. I don't want a leg that can tap for me. I don't want a foot that can go up and down or anything. I just want a peg leg. And he went into his back workstation, and he came out with like a pipe that looked like he could have gotten it from Home Depot. But they're all the same. These are just pylons, and this would be used with, you know, a basic foot and someone who's just learning how to walk again. They're also used to extend the height of the prosthetic leg. If you're taller, you know, they'll cut it down and they could put this in between the knee and the foot. So there's no real technology here or anything. And this just kind of goes into the end of my leg. And then I tap dance with it. And I really treat this as an extension of my body and a musical instrument. Tap dancers are always calling themselves musicians, and so I will still say that about myself. And this has kind of given me a new life, so to say.
So you've been through a lot of treatment. You faced a lot. At any point during all of this, did you say, maybe my dancing career is over, or was it always in the back of your head, I'm going to get over this and I'm going to get dancing again?
It was always in the back of my head. You know, when I asked the questions of, you know, when am I going to dance again, to my doctors, their responses were, well, you know, you'll be up and walking again maybe in 3 or 4 weeks. And I would say, yeah, but when am I going to dance again? And they would kind of, you know, skirt past the fact that, okay, you know, he was just diagnosed with cancer and he had all this, you know, surgery. Why don't we talk about the small goals first? And, you know, me growing up and now, I've always been about the bigger goals and really reaching those. And that's always how I, you know, set myself apart from some of my friends. And that was my mindset about it all. Just going back to school during treatment was a huge thing for me. My doctor said, look, you're going through chemotherapy. If you go back to school and you get something like a common cold, that's it. You know, you could die from that. And I just said to them, well, I already registered for classes, and I was a full-time student during chemo. I took 13 and a half credits, and I was learning how to walk on my prosthetic, going to physical therapy, at the hospital, inpatient, outpatient, getting the two lung operations. And I even performed in a show while I was at school.
Wow.
I would get chemo during the day, and then at night I would sing and dance. I mean, not really. I wasn't tap dancing at the time, but I was kind of stage movement around here or there. And those are the things that kept me going, and those are the things that, you know, made me believe that when I had finished this treatment, I would teach myself how to tap again.
Okay. So tell me a little bit about what it was like the first time that you danced after your amputation, and how far have you come since then? I mean, we've seen you dance. You're phenomenal.
Thank you. The first time that I tried to dance, I wasn't trying to... Well, actually, you know, so the first time I tried to dance, I put on a Peg Leg Bates video, and I was watching what he was doing, and I just tried to replicate those steps. So he was a below-the-knee amputee, so he had function of his knee. And I'm an above-the-knee amputee, so I don't have a knee at all. So a lot of all of the movement comes from my thigh and my butt muscles. So it's more difficult than what he was doing. And I just try to think of myself as a drummer and hear the sounds of a time step in my head. So for those of you who don't tap dance, a time step, as I say, is a step that keeps time. But the simple steps for a time step are step, hop, step, for lap, step, hop, step, for lap, step, bop, 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 bop. And then I started to take the steps and beats and I gave them counts. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So I just tried to make 6 sounds on the right side and 6 sounds on the left side. So instead of step, hop, step, for lap, step, step, hop, step, for lap, step, I did peg, hop, peg, for lap, peg, and then step, peg, toe, heel, peg, heel. So I started to recreate this vocabulary for myself so that I could understand it and so that I could explain it to others as well. And from there, the steps just started to come back to me with muscle memory and also, like I said, treating it as an extension of my body and an instrument. And then I stopped trying to replicate Peg Leg Bates, and I just started to create music for me and try to come up with my own style. And, you know, 2011, 2012 brand of, you know, this guy with one leg tap dancing, and, you know, and that's kind of taken me to today and just trying to change, you know, how I approach this art form.
So what kind of advice would you give to somebody who might be in a situation that you were in years ago, where maybe they're having a major surgery or they get diagnosed with cancer and they're thinking about their career or their art form, their athletic career, their passion.
Yeah.
What would you say to them? Because you've overcome so much.
I mean, anything is possible. It really is. And as cheesy as it sounds, it's that same thing that, you know, your parents always tell you, follow your dreams. And I used to listen to the song Dream On in the hospital every single day. And it was not because it was a great message. It was solely because of the intensity and the artistry that Steven Tyler and Joe Perry and the rest of those band members put into their craft. And when you watch them live on stage, you see them, they're incredible. So watching those kind of videos and seeing these people gave me hope that, like, okay, I can still do this, I can overcome this, and I can get through it, and I can continue to follow my dreams.
That's awesome.
Yeah, thank you.
Is there anything else you'd like to mention or talk about?
If there are any other amputees out there who want to tap dance, reach out to me, because I think it would be cool to get like a tap company.
Yeah. Have you met any others?
I have met.
Well, you have?
I've met
good.
A couple, yeah, I've met a couple amputees who are trying to tap dance, and I've reached out to a few of them. And they're kind of all over the country.
Right.
And, you know, I'm able to kind of coach them here and there and say, oh, you know, try putting your weight on this side or try getting this or get a peg leg and see what happens.
All about the peg leg.
Yeah, don't hurt yourself, though. Please. I'm not
saying,
hey, everyone, go get peg legs.
Yeah.
But, please be safe out there.
So what's your proudest accomplishment to date?
Oh, my proudest accomplishment. I would have to say getting to perform for Vice President Joe Biden and his wife, Dr. Jill Biden. That was really exciting down in D.C., I've got to meet a lot of great people and perform for a lot of great people. Just a couple of weeks ago, I performed for the president of Egypt, President El-Sisi. I was in Sharm el-Sheikh at the World Youth Forum talking about my experiences with cancer and having a disability and disability in the arts. And it was a really great event about being the change in the world that we want to see. And so I was an ambassador to the United States, just speaking with other young leaders from all over the world. So that was very exciting. So that's another one up there. And just living every day, just being alive, you know, getting from New York City to here and just being able to drive myself.
Yeah,
and,
for sure.
And, you know, I was just telling you, I was in Japan 2 days ago, and being able to walk all over the country and just have my life back and have my freedom and independence back, and adding that normalcy to my life is one of my biggest accomplishments.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode. Tune in next week when Cure's editors will get together and discuss some of their favorite podcasts from 2018.